Hare Krishna. So thank you everyone so much for coming. It's wonderful to be back at the manor. Prabhupada said the manor is beautiful, and when the sun shines, there's no place better. But even when it's raining, it's beautiful. So we are, firstly, with your blessings and permission and kind good wishes, I'll try to share something on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We are reading an electrifying, explosive part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Usually the best is in the middle. So we are in the Madhya Leela and we're right in the middle, the ninth chapter of the Madhya Leela entitled Lord Chaitanya's Travel to the Holy Places. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas. Lord Chandas Thakur said he gave up the small world of family life in order to embrace the whole world as his family. And so embracing the whole world as his family, he's moving, he's walking, place to place, town to town, person to person, heart to heart, sharing Krishna Prem, because this is the wealth he brought, Golokera Prema Dhan, Harinam Sankirtan. So he's giving, he's very kind, Mahavadanyaya. So as he walks through South India today, let us see what's happening. So we're reading from text number 38, but just I'll read the English translations up to that point. So text number 34. According to this statement of the Shastras, the glories of the holy name of Krishna are unlimited. Still, I could not chant his holy name. Please hear the reason for this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has met a Brahmana, and the Brahmana is very much in love with Lord Ram and has always been chanting Lord Ram's names. He would have been happy. This week was Ram Navami. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and tells him, no, but you should chant Krishna's names. And this is his reply. My worshipable Lord has been Lord Ramachandra, and by chanting his holy name I received happiness. Because I received such happiness, I chanted the holy name of Lord Ram day and night. By your appearance, Lord Krishna's holy name also appeared. And at that time, the glories of Krishna's name awoke in my heart. Sir, you are that Lord Krishna himself. This is my conclusion. Saying this, the Brahmana fell down at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So read now from text number 38. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. After showing mercy to the Brahmana, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the next day and arrived at Vridhakashi, where he visited the temple of Lord Shiva. Purport. Vridhakashi's present name is Vridhachalam. It is situated in the southern Arcot district on the bank of the river Manimukha. This place is also known as Kalahastipur. Lord Shiva's temple there was worshipped for many years by Govinda, the son of Ramanujacharya. Srila Prabhupada ki. According to one's consciousness, they will remember certain things, isn't it? Sometimes you give a class and then you ask people after, like, amazing class. What did you like? And then they'd mention like a joke you said or something. It's like, okay, that wasn't the main point of the class. It's interesting. So every time in history is known by different people according to their consciousness. For example, for devotees of Krishna, for Prabhupada Nugas, 1966 is an important year. Because 1966 was the year ISKCON was incorporated and Matchless Gifts was inaugurated, isn't it? But in the material world, why is 1966 an important year? And if you don't know this, we're going to deport you from the country. Why? England won the World Cup. Right? You knew that, right? Haridasa Varyaprabhu, deport him. 4-2, West Germany, at Wembley Stadium. How can you not remember? 1969 is a very important year for the devotees of Krishna because that was the year the first devotees came from America and came to England and started the Krishna consciousness movement. Historic year, 1969. 1969 in the material world, why was it such a historic year? Vietnam? Yeah, Vietnam was there. Berlin Wall fell down, yeah. These are all. It's one small step for man and one giant leap for mankind. Because Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon. Anyway, that's another story. Not today. 1973, amazing year, because Shri Radha Gokulananda appeared in Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. But 1973 also, historic. Britain entered the EU, EEC at that time. So it's interesting, according to your consciousness, you'll remember different times for different things. Just as a side note, psychologically, the way we remember the past, just so you know, is not always accurate. Sometimes people talk about the good old times or the terrible times of the past. But did you know psychologically there's something called the peak end principle? Yeah, remember this. When we think of the past, we don't actually remember the entirety of that time. What we tend to remember is the peak emotion of that time and the end emotion of that time. And we define that whole period in our life by the peak emotion and the end emotion. So say, for example, 10 years ago, you were like, your life was full of struggle, full of difficulty, but one amazing thing happened, or something amazing happened at the end. You look back and think, I was having the time of my life. It was amazing. I was in my flow state. No, maybe not. And sometimes in the past, it could be a very good time in your life, but maybe there was one very difficult experience, or the end experience was very difficult, and you'll remember it as a terrible time. So it's interesting, people's memory. Today we're entering the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is a very special time, 1510. The year 1510 is a very special year. Because in the year 1510, amazing things happen. In the month of Magh, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyas. In the very next month, the month of Falgun, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to Jagannath Puri. In the very next month, the month of Chaitra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converts Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. And in the very next month, the month of Vaishak, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embarks on a tour of South India. The tour of South India is incredible. One disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he wrote the book, The Hare Krishna Explosion. So the South India tour was the explosion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had just taken sannyas. He was feeling these incredible emotions of love for Krishna. He wanted to go to Vrindavan, but he couldn't. The devotees knew, if he goes to Vrindavan, maybe he'll never come back. I lost my heart in Vrindavan. So they were discouraging. No, don't go there. All kind of tricks to make sure he doesn't go. Instead, he came to Shantipur, to Jagannath Puri, and then to South India. So he was traveling. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu created an explosion, a spiritual revolution. For one moment, we have to also think about what else was happening in the world in 1510. What else was happening in the world in the 14 and 1500s is very, very interesting. Because there was a very, very interesting thing going on in the world. Does anyone know in world history what the 14 and 1500s were famous for? The Renaissance. This is on my mind because we were just in Italy. And in Italy, there's Florence. And Florence was the center of the Renaissance. So what happened? This is your Saturday morning history lesson. In the 5th century, the Roman Empire fell. And when the Roman Empire fell, according to historians, it marked the beginning of the Middle Ages. The Middle Ages were also known as the Dark Ages because it was seen as a time of ignorance, a time of war, a time of very little creativity. There were famines, there was a plague, there was a pandemic. And that Dark Age went on from the 5th century to about the 13th, 14th century, like that. But in the 14th century, there was a turn, there was a change, there was a transition point. And it all began from Florence, Italy. Because in Florence, Italy, you had artists. You had artists like Leonardo da Vinci, isn't it? The Mona Lisa, right? Mona Lisa, right? Yeah. The most famous oil painting in the world. The Renaissance was a time when the greatest thinkers, the greatest artists, scientists, explorers, everyone was flourishing. New ideas were coming. A new kind of approach to life was being crafted. And in this period, you have had some of the greatest revolution in the world. Because as I said, you had these artists like Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo. Not just artists, but you had philosophers who were very notable in history. For example, René Descartes, I think, therefore I am, another approach. Not just those kind of philosophers, but in that time you also had political philosophers, Machiavelli and people like that. But it wasn't just philosophers, you also had authors. In that period was some of the main authors of notable in history, like Shakespeare, Chaucer. Chaucer was a little before, but amazing writers. Not just that, but scientists. This period was also known for its scientists. You had Galileo, Copernicus, these kind of people. And not just that, this period, the 1400s and 1500s, was also known for exploration. Because you had explorers, the most noteworthy being Christopher Columbus, who discovered the New World. So history is interesting. It's interesting to know. Renaissance means a time of rebirth, a time of revival, a time of revolution. So in the Western European history, it said that the Renaissance was the most important period. Many historians say like that because it was a revolution. But the Renaissance of the Western world was taking a direction from God to man. In the Renaissance period, it was going away from the church. It was going away from religion. In the Renaissance period, ideas were spreading because in the 1400s, you also had Gutenberg, who discovered what? The printing press. And because there were books now printing, ideas were spreading fast. Of course, the Bible was also being printed. But like this, there was a direction from God to man. So the Western Renaissance in the 1400s and 1500s was a revolution which was moving towards humanism and which was moving towards atheism. And what's happening on the other side of the world? The spiritual revolution, the golden revolution, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Renaissance. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just like the Western Renaissance, is considered the bridge between the Dark Ages to the modern period. The Renaissance or the revolution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is considered the bridge from the Dark Age in which the essence of the Vedas was being lost to the modern age in which the Acharyas came to then spread these beautiful teachings all over the world. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the bridge taking... bridge preaching. He was creating the bridge. So that spiritual renaissance was the bridge period. So this is very, very important for us to know. It's important to know what's going on in the world. And so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu travels to South India. And South India is just like an incredible revolution. It's like the outpouring of love. The transformation, the revolution of spirituality. No one had ever seen anything like this before. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India, we could say there were many, many reasons why he did it. The first reason that he gave when he had to convince everyone that he wanted to go was he said, what did he say? I want to go and find my brother, Vishwarup. Vishwarupa Koira Sannyas. He had taken sannyas and he said, I want to go and find my brother. But that was one reason, maybe just an external reason. The other reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to the south is because he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness to a place which was filled by the crocodiles of many philosophies, as Kaviraj Goswami says. But not just that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to go south just to give something, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go south to get certain things as well. He wanted to get, for example, books like the Brahma Samhita, the Krishna Karanamrita, because they would strengthen his movement. But he didn't want to just get external objects. By going to South India, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also wanted to get the association of great Vaishnavas. And therefore he was going to meet Ramananda Rai, he was going to meet all his eternal associates. But not just that. South India and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's trip there did something very, very incredible if you actually study it very closely. And what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's trip in South India did is it established Krishna consciousness. It established Gaudiya Vaishnavism. It established the doctrine that he was sharing with the world as the most advanced, evolved, an elevated theology in the world. In the world, there are many religions. Sometimes people ask us, are you guys trying to convert me? What do you think? Are we out there, the Hare Krishnas, are we trying to convert people? What do you think, Sandeep? What? Are we? Yes? Put your hand up if you think, yes, we are trying to convert people. There's all these book distributors in here and none of them are putting their hand up. Complete diplomacy. Are we trying to convert people? Yeah, Shyam Sundar, look, he looks like dangerous as well. It's like, yeah, we're trying to convert people. Shyam Sundar, he looks dangerous. Are we? Are we not? Yes? Govinda, no. Interesting. Would you say you're a convert? In the highest sense, there's no question of conversion. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunoi Shravana Adi Sudachite Karaya Yudoi. How you can convert? Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem is already with you. Like it or not, you love Krishna. Like it or not, you love him. You're in love with him. But sadhya kabunoi, shravanadhi, siddhachite. You have to engage in the process. So in a higher sense, we're not converting anyone because you're already there. We're just reminding you of what you've forgotten. Isn't it? Prabhupada came and the person asked him, what have you come here to teach? Prabhupada said, I've come to teach what you've forgotten. What's that? That's why I've come to teach you. So, in a higher sense, we're not trying to convert anyone. But in another sense, yes, we are converting people. Because even that language is used in Shastra. He converted the Buddhists. He converted the Muslims. The Patans became the Patan Vaishnavas. The Buddhists turned and became Vaishnavas, chanting. In one sense, we're not converting. In another sense, we are converting. But in another sense, we can say there's no force. And therefore, the word conversion doesn't really apply because conversion gives a sense of force, a sense of imposition, a sense of intimidation, a sense of imposing yourself on someone else. So in that sense, we're not trying to convert anyone. It's all through inspiration. In the theologies of the world, our approach is there is unity in diversity. That whatever religion you practice, if you practice it with sincerity and purity, you will achieve spiritual progress. So there's unity. But there's also diversity. Because we understand that through the theologies of the world, there is a progression, there is an evolution of thought. And here we are as the Hare Krishnas, here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and what he wants to establish to the world is that of all the theologies in the world, which can give you some spiritual benefit, ultimately Gaudiya Vaishnavism is the elevated, the most evolved path. Gaudiya means that which comes from the land of Gouda. But other scholars say Gaudiya comes from the word Gura, which means Gaur. Gaur, isn't it? Jagri. Because the Gaudiya Sampradaya is the proverbial icing on the cake. It's the icing on the cake. It's the sweetest, most elevated, most beautiful revelation of God consciousness. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki Sataram Lakshman Hanuman ki Jai. Okay, everyone says they're the highest. Everyone says they're the best. Everyone says they're the truth, the way, and the life. Is it life or light? I always forget. Is it light or life? Life. You can see he spent a lot of time on the streets speaking to such individuals. So, what are the objective measures by which one can understand Gaudiya Vaishnavism to be the most evolved theological path? There has to be some objective criteria. There has to be some objective measure. In order for something to be the most evolved theology in the world, the first thing is complexity. It has to be a complex theology which has the ability to answer all the different nuances of reality that we see around us. The most advanced theology in the world has to have a philosophy which is complex enough to decode and decipher to people the answers behind all the universal questions that everyone asks. Therefore, unless one theology has the most complex philosophy and philosophical explanation, you can't say it's the most evolved theology. But not just complexity, the next thing something of theology has to have to be the most advanced is it doesn't just have to embody complexity, but it should also embody intimacy. It's not just about knowing God. It's not just about knowing reality. It's not just about being able to answer questions. But that theology also has to help you to love God, love your life, experience a movement of emotions within your being that gives you deep fulfillment. So it's not just complexity. There must also be intimacy. But it's not just intimacy. What there also has to be for something to be the most advanced theology is efficacy. Efficacy means it's able to actually transform people. It doesn't just tell you how sweet God is. It also empowers you yourself to taste the sweetness of God. It doesn't just show you a jar of honey, but it's able to empower you to then open that jar and taste it yourself. So the most advanced theology also has efficacy. But not just that. In order for something to be the most advanced theology, it also has to have accessibility. It shouldn't just be exclusive. It should be available to everyone. It should be accessible to everyone. It should be achievable to everyone. It's not just the elite here. We are the Gaudiya elite. No. The most advanced theology should be embody accessibility. But not just that. For something to be the most advanced theology in the world, it's not just that there's complexity. It's not just that there's intimacy. It's not just that there's efficacy. It's not just that there's accessibility, but there's virality. That theology should be able to spread beyond all barriers, beyond all cultural, all economic, all political boundaries. It must be able to transcend all of that because it's too powerful. It's too powerful to contain it within just someone's construct. Now, why am I telling you all of this? Because when you study Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's journey to the south, he actually fulfills every single one of these criterias. Complexity, he does it. Because who does he speak to? He speaks to all the theologies. He speaks to the Muslims. He speaks to the Buddhists. He speaks to... In one Odia manuscript, it's even said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Guru Nanak, the Sikhs. He speaks to all these people. And he convinces them. He convinces them that this is the most advanced theology. Not just that, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even speaks to those within the Vedic fold who have very strong ideas in philosophy. Of them, the most stubborn are the Mayavadis. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu convinces them, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, all these people of the time who are so stuck in their philosophy. Because he shows that, no, you're into philosophy? Well, you don't know. This has the most complexity, the most layered understanding. So when you look at the South Indian tour, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu establishes, without a shadow of a doubt, the complexity of Gaudiya Vaishnava theology. But not just that, doesn't he establish how intimate it is? Because he goes, where does he go? To Godavari, the river Godavari, and there he has beautiful conversations with Ramananda Rai. Actually, Godavari, the word Godavari means where everything meets, the confluence of everything. That's the literal meaning of Godavari. So it's very interesting because in that place, the Godavari, where all the rivers meet, is also the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Ramananda Rai and brought all the teachings together and finally brought it to the sweetest apex where Ramananda Rai was and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were discussing about the deepest and sweetest and most heart-touching type of love, which is the love between Krishna and the gopis. And not just the love between Krishna and the gopis, but the love between Krishna and gopis in the mood of separation. Sometimes it's said that the Bhagavatam is the body of Krishna, isn't it? And then it's said that if the Bhagavatam is the body of Krishna, then the 10th canto is the face of Krishna, isn't it? But some commentators say the 10th canto is the heart of Krishna. And then what they go on to say, that if the 10th canto is the heart of Krishna, then the 5 chapters known as the Rasa Panchadhyay are the 5 life years of Krishna. Why are they the 5 life years of the heart of Krishna? Because in those 5 chapters, we are getting a window into the love that Krishna experiences with his most confidential devotees in the sweetest mellow Madhurya. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed this on his South India trip, that this is the most intimacy, so much closeness to God. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, not just that, but efficacy, he showed how that could be awakened within someone. He wasn't just a dry philosopher. He was teaching, but then he was also awakening. And people were just dancing, people were just transformed, drunkards, all kinds of people who were so far away were just transformed, because the most advanced theology transforms you. And not just that, wasn't it accessible to everyone? Because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled, patra patra vichar nahi nahi stan stan, je jone paye tane kare prema dhan, patra apatra vichar nahi. He did not consider this is a good place, this is a bad place. Watford is bad, Harrow is bad. Everywhere is bad, actually. Everywhere is bad. Vichar nahi, no. Je jone paye tane kare prema dhan. Wherever he went, he just gave it. Stri, vridha, yuvak, balak, Korea, Dubai, whether they were women, they were young people, they were old, they were young, all of them drowned. Korea, Dubai, they all drowned. Accessible. He just made it available to everyone. There was no barriers. There was no limitation. And not just that, virality. Don't you see virality on the South Indian tour? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just meets one person from one village and he just transforms that one person. And that person has been so transformed that they then go to another person and in their village, and anyone who then comes in contact with them experiences the same transformation. And they all just become devotees. And then they go, and whoever comes in contact with them, they all go. Amazing. Virality. Once Prabhupada said to Dhananjaya Prabhu, "It's too late." It's like, really? Prabhupada said, "It's too late. Tomorrow, even if all the temples close down, even if all the devotees leave, even if the Krishna consciousness movement shuts down, it's too late. Because the books are out there. And one person's going to read it. And they're going to become convinced. And then they're going to start the whole thing again." It's too late. It's too late. That's virality. That's the virality of the most advanced theology in the world. That you can't, it will spread. You can't hold it back. When I was joining the movement, then, or trying to become an ashram devotee, then the devotees were trying to convince me. So, you know, it was one of those preaching sessions. Yeah. Historic moments in the life of a devotee. And I was thinking, these guys, they really want me, you know. They really see that there's something, they really spotted something special in me. I mean, these guys are giving me a lot of attention, you know. And then at the end of the meeting, one of the devotees said something to me which just like humbled me like anything, but inspired me like anything. And he said, "The Krishna consciousness movement is gonna go on whether you join it or not. The only question is, do you want to be part of the miracle?" I was like, "Sign me up. I want to be part of it. I want to be in this movement. I want to be part of the adventure. I want to be part of the magic. I want to be part of that transcendental drama." Because that kind of virality of the Krishna consciousness movement, you can't stop it. Because this is the most advanced theology in the world. So as we're reading the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita, as we're going through the South India tour, we have to understand that deep, deep things are happening here. When we read the CC, we're not just reading a sequence of events. Underlying it is a deep conceptual flow that is going on, which is revealing many, many things. Not just that, when we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have to now absorb the spirit of this. You see? You see, the Vaishnav historians, they were not just dry historians. And in 1510, he went here. And in 1511, he did this. And in 1512, this problem came about. It's not just dry history. You see, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was a connoisseur of devotion. He was not just recording a dry history of events. But what he was trying to do was awaken a spirit within us. Sometimes people complain, "Oh no, there's a problem. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says the sequence of events is like this, but in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, the sequence is different. This proves that there's a problem. This is not authentic." Sometimes people argue, because it's true, actually. If you see the sequence of events of Chaitanya Charitamrita and the sequence of events in Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's different. But you have to understand that the Vaishnav historians were not just interested in getting all the details right. What they were primarily interested in is sharing the spirit of the time. We have to know the spirit of the time. In German, they call this the Zeitgeist, the spirit of the time. So as we're reading these chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have to understand what is the spirit of this time. This spirit has to be recreated. This spirit has to come back again. This spirit has to continue in the Krishna consciousness movement. Because this spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in South India is the very heartbeat of Srila Prabhupada's movement. What is this spirit that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embodied when he went to South India? It was a spirit of giving. It was a spirit in which there was no judgment of anyone. It was a spirit in which there was no envy. It was a spirit of excitement, a spirit of adventure. What is the spirit of South India? It's the spirit of expanding. It's the spirit of going everywhere and anywhere, not considering one's own comfort, and trying to share Krishna consciousness, trying to affect people's hearts and bring about a revolution. This is the spirit that we're trying to catch when we read the ninth chapter of the Madhya Leela. We're not just trying to memorize the pastimes. This is wisdom that breathes. This is alive. This is meant to change something within our heart. We want to recreate that spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in South India, because that spirit is very, very beautiful. Just now we were in Italy, and it was very, very nice. We had a youth retreat with many young people in Villa Vrindavan, and then we went to Bologna. And in Bologna, it's very, very beautiful because we have like a few young couples there, and they have such an incredible spirit. They're just out there in the city, and they're just sharing Krishna consciousness with young people. And we did many, many programs there. And when we were there in the evenings in their little place where they gather people, it just felt like, my God, this is just like New York 1966 all over again. It was such a beautiful spirit. These young, intelligent people who just put their own things to one side and just going out, trying to share Krishna consciousness with others. It was very, very heart-touching to see young preachers, young grihasthas, just missionaries. And one morning we were together with all of them, and we were watching the memories of Shyam Sundar Prabhu and the famous video where Shyam Sundar Prabhu talks about how they all went to Haight-Ashbury to begin a temple. And in Haight-Ashbury, they just rented out a place, but they never knew where's the next month's rent coming from. But they just thought, we'll do it. They said, the Swamiji told us, if you take a risk for Krishna, then Krishna has to help you. Krishna is forced to help you. So they said, we were testing that out to the max. And he said, one day we just didn't know, where are we going to get the next month's rent from? The landlord was on our case, we had no idea. They said, we came down, we came into the streets of Haight-Ashbury, and there were $100 bills flying in the street, and not a person in sight. And they said, we just caught as many bills as we could catch. We went in, we paid the rent, and he said it came to the point where we began expecting things like this to happen. Because it was the spirit of the time. He said the spirit of the time was take a risk for Krishna. And then he said, but maybe that spirit is lost. Maybe we've become comfortable. Maybe we've lost the spirit of that time. We want to re-find this spirit when we're reading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveling in South India. How can we absorb that spirit of giving? It's such a beautiful thing. You have to give. It's just like recently, I'm doing like the devotees encouraged me to do social media. So I'm on social media now. Yeah. Follow me, like me, love me, do all that stuff. at Keshava Swami, welcome to help me out. But it was interesting, you know, I put a video up there, one of many. And then one of the devotees alerted me, oh no, someone's written something, you know, they've written something. I said, what did they write? Anyway, I posted a video and someone wrote a comment. Comments are dangerous on social media. Anyway, this person wrote a comment and said, easy for you, no bills, no responsibilities, always traveling, good food, easy for you. So they alerted me to this, you know, the red comment on the YouTube. So, you know, as we all do, well, as I do, you become immediately defensive. So I was like, yeah, well, tell him to join me then. that was my response. But then I had to think deeply. And I thought, maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. Maybe for all the time, for all the space, for all the opportunity that I have, having walked away from so many things, am I giving enough? Maybe I should be giving more. So it was a reflective moment. I thought, yeah, maybe. And then I remembered my spiritual master, among the many instructions he gave to me, one instruction he gave to me was, you have to always give more than you get. He said, if you give more than you get, you'll stay in this movement for a lifetime, not just that. You'll thrive in this movement, not just that. You'll get the mercy that will take you to where you want to go. If we get more respect, we have to give more love. If we get more facilities, we have to give more service. If we get more opportunities, we have to give more energy. Because you have to always give more than you get. And so in that moment when I just thought, well, maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. Because Krishna doesn't see how much you're giving, but he's seeing how much you're holding back. So maybe I should be giving more. Maybe I should be doing more. Maybe, just maybe, Krishna is speaking through him. Because you have to give, because that's the spirit. One devotee was giving a remembrance of Karamakanda Maharaj, and I think Maharaj had gone to South Africa or something. Anyway, it was 3 days, he just went flat out, like Rath Yatra to evening class to long kirtans. And you know, when Karamakanda Swami does a kirtan, there's no like third or fourth gear, it's all like fifth gear, high energy. Anyway, on the Monday morning, after like three or four days of complete intensity, he was driving him to the airport. And then Maharaj in the car said, it's the duty of the spiritual master to do everything, leave everything behind for the disciple. And he got out of the car and he said, I've left every last bit of energy here. He said, I don't know what more I could have left here. I don't know what more I could have done. I left every last bit of energy here. Just giving. Such a beautiful spirit. Today, I don't know if today is the actual day, but I think it is the 74th Vyasa Puja of His Holiness Jayaptaka Maharaj. Is it today? It's today. His Holiness Jayaptaka Maharaj ki. And Jayaptaka Maharaj, who could say like such an ambassador of giving. Every time I feel like a little lazy or a little sleepy or a little lethargic, which is quite often, then I turn on my computer and I watch this video, Never Give Up, is it? Never Give Up, right? You can watch it on YouTube. If you've not watched it, go onto YouTube and write Never Give Up. Also write Jayaptaka Swami, otherwise you may get something else. Yeah. Never Give Up, Jayaptaka Swami. I mean, it's incredible. someone has a stroke, how many years ago? 10 years ago? 12? 2008, 15 years ago. This is incredible. I mean, this is just... How do you do that? Have a stroke, and then in the next 15 years of your life, just continue traveling, continue giving, continue just making yourself completely available. Just continue saying, this life is for Krishna, and I don't hold anything back. That is someone who's completely grasped the spirit. That's the real substance of the spiritual life. And that is, when we're reading this, that is what we're trying to absorb. Yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the most advanced theology in the world. He gave the best thing. How can we just hold it? This is the most valuable thing. We have to give it. We have to reach out. And everyone's a part of it. Everyone's a part of it. Mark Zuckerberg, I was watching a video by Mark Zuckerberg. I wasn't spacing out, it was Krishna conscious related. Anyway, Mark Zuckerberg, he tells this really good story. It's a really good story. He says that John F. Kennedy once went to Cape Canaveral. You know Cape Canaveral? NASA. So John F. Kennedy is in Cape Canaveral. Anyway, he goes into the bathroom. And so in the bathroom, from a distance, he sees the janitor. And the janitor is like, just like super attentive, super enthused, super inspired. Normally you don't really see them like that. Yeah? He was like really into it. Like washing, cleaning, keeping everything perfect. So John F. Kennedy comes to him and he goes, "You look so inspired." So he said, "Yeah." And then John F. Kennedy said to him, like, "What inspires you about being a janitor? What inspires you about being a janitor?" And his answer was amazing. You know what he said? He said, "I'm not a janitor. I'm part of a team that is going to put a man on the moon." That is amazing. Because somehow they had been able to create that spirit that everyone's part of it. Everyone's part of the most exciting thing in the world, which for them was putting a man on the moon. But for us, it's spreading Krishna consciousness. Whether you're the pujari, whether you're the cleaner, whether you're the cook, whether you're the book distributor, everyone is part of a team which is meant to make a revolution of spiritual consciousness in this world. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He just took everyone and he just gave them different things to do. To Nityananda, he said, "Go to Bengal." To others, he said, "Travel further afield." To Tapan Mishra, he said, "You be in Varanasi." To Srivas Thakur, he said, "Just do kirtans in your house." Just kirtans in your house. Yeah, because from the purity of that kirtan, so much is happening. Everyone has their place. Everyone has their role. Everyone has something to do. So let us... try to discover the spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is giving the most advanced theology in the world. That's very clear. Some are converting. Some are changing. And some don't change. But that's okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't judge them. Here, sometimes we see that they're changing. But sometimes they're not changing. But still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inspires everyone and leaves everyone with their heart touched. And so that's what we're trying to do in the Krishna consciousness movement. So let us give more than we get and let us really create a very vibrant spiritual life. And as we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, let us not just read about historical events or a sequence of different activities which happened, but let us try to absorb what is the spirit of the time. The spirit of the time is renaissance. The spirit of the time is revival, revolution. The spirit of the time is to create a change, to give. And that spirit of the time, we want to recreate that. We want to experience that now. And if we do that, through that mystical adjustment of consciousness, we will be living in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes even now. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. Adhyapiha shei lila kaha gauraroi konakona bhagyavan dekhi barapoi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are going on even today. Even today, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is traveling place to place, heart to heart, person to person. We can be part of it. But we have to break out this comfort, break out of this lethargy, break out of this selfishness and constant calculation. Become magnanimous, become open-hearted. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So anyway, sorry, that was a little unstructured. I didn't... It was kind of a busy time, last few days, so I couldn't systematically. So I just tried to be a bit more freestyle. So sometimes then what is in your heart comes out, but when your heart's not clean, then it's a little... Thank you so much. We have some time if anyone has any questions, comments, corrections. Okay, I have hands. Yes, I don't know, there's a mic.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for such a wonderful presentation. From the story of janitor, a question came to my mind that one thing is that we have to look after our own Krishna consciousness, and it's also part of our responsibility to inspire those who are our subordinates in one sense. So how can we keep ourselves always inspired like the janitor, and what facilities or what can we do for those who are in one sense under our care so that they always feel inspired?
We have to become mature. We have to become self-sufficient. We have to become deeply thoughtful about our spiritual life. When you ride a bike, it never goes in a straight line. You're always going left and right, isn't it? So now if I'm trying to learn a bike and I say to you, how much left should I go and how much right should I go? Can I answer you? Can you answer me? You have to ride the bike. And then you have to make the adjustment. And you'll know. If your heart is in the right place, if you really want to give, and you're guided by knowledge and Vaishnavas, then you'll know when to make the adjustments. Sometimes you just have to give and not think about yourself. And sometimes you do need to take some time to nourish yourself, of course, so that you can give more. So that balance, how can we give you a formula? One formula that Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj once gave is, he said, 8-4. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling for 8 months of the year, and the 4 months of Chaturmasya, he was in one place. So he said, maybe that's a formula for someone that, you know, that's the proportion of giving to nourishing yourself. But everyone has a different life, everyone has a different service, everyone has a different mission. So we have to do both. The best Gosti Anandi is the Bhajan Anandi who preaches. So we have to be deeply absorbed. You can't take the world to a higher place than you've reached internally yourself. So you must invest in yourself. You are the best advertisement of the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada said to Harisori Prabhu, preaching is easy business. Just show people how happy you are. Become a happy devotee. Become an inspired devotee. Become a devotee who's finding Krishna in the holy name, in the Bhagavatam. And then surely, whoever comes in contact with you, virality, they will become infected. Therefore, the devotees are dangerous. Yes. Because they will inspire you. So be with such Vaishnavas, learn, hear, deeply reflect, and then become a mature. We have to become mature and just realize when we need to make an adjustment and make the adjustment. Hope that helps. Yes. Oh, yes, we'll go this way.
Hi, Krishna.
Hare Krishna, yes.
I have a question regarding how does, the tour in South India, mm-hmm. it must have worked in conjunction with the base that's being set up in Jagannath Puri, in the places in North India where Mahaprabhu was mainly residing. So what is the importance of that, you know, when he had stayed there for long periods of time?
In Jagannath Puri?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the details of his journey, but I just know that, well, you said he demonstrated how this heart of giving is in South India.
Yeah.
But what about there?
You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, is the Supreme Lord. He knows what he's doing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to South India. Why South India? Why is South India so important? Why not go to North India? The reason he goes to South India, Kaviraj Goswami says, because here there are key people he wants to meet, there are key philosophies that he wants to interface with, there is virality that he wants to show. So South India has its role in the preaching mission. It has certain outcomes. So South India is important. Why does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu go to Prayag? Why does he go to Varanasi? Because there, Varanasi is important because it's the seat of Mayavad. When Prabhupada created the Bhaktivedanta Institute, which is the scientific wing of ISKCON, he said, this is so important because this is cutting atheism at the root. So like the root of Mayavad is like Varanasi. Mahaprabhu tells Tapan Mishra, who's like he's a bhakta, he's like, I want you to go and live in Varanasi. He's like, Varanasi is such a dry place. There's no one to do Krishna Katha with. He says, no, you have to preach there. So Varanasi, Prayag are important for that. Why does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stay in Jagannath Puri? Because Puri, you can say there are many reasons, but Puri is important. Number one, because the whole world comes to Puri. The greatest festival on earth to this day is Jagannath Puri Rath Yatra. So if you want to go to one place and preach to the whole world in one place on one day, then the place to go is Jagannath Puri Rath Yatra, because everyone comes there. So Puri is a strategic place where Mahaprabhu goes, because from there he can influence many, many other people. So he's thinking deeply. But Puri also has an internal reason, because Vrindavan is Madhurya Dham. Mayapur is Audharya Dham. But Puri is Viraha Kshetra. Puri is the place of separation, because Krishna has big eyes. Balaram has big eyes. They're stunned. Why are they stunned? Because they're the forms of Krishna in separation from Srimati Radharani. And Gauranga, who is he? He's Radharani in the mood of separation from Krishna. So can you imagine the explosion that comes together when Krishna, who's in complete stunned separation from Radharani, comes face to face with Radharani, who's in complete stunned separation from Krishna? Boom! There's a complete explosion. And that's the Gambira. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is amazing. He has all these places he goes to. It's all strategic. It's all like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I'm going to Vrindavan. I'll go via Ramakeli. Now that makes no sense at all, because Puri is here, Vrindavan is here, and Ramakeli is like here. It's like me saying, I'm going to go to the theater via the Goshala. Like, why? That's not even on the way. Why would you go there? It doesn't make sense. But Mahaprabhu, he knows. Ramakeli, there are great devotees there, Rupa and Sanatan. They will become the founding fathers of this mission. So yes, I'm going to Vrindavan. I'm just going to go via there to just check out the scenery, see what happens. So Mahaprabhu goes to all these places. One commentator even says Mahaprabhu went to Kurukshetra. I didn't read that before, but Prabhupada also says it in a purport, that when he went to Prayag, he also... Kurukshetra is also a very significant place. Next week, we're going to go to Goloka Dham, and we're doing a retreat with Sachinandan Maharaj. And the topic we'll be presenting is Vrindavan via Kurukshetra. Because Kurukshetra is an incredibly important place. And if you want to go to Vrindavan, you can pick up a lot of lessons at Kurukshetra. So Mahaprabhu also went there. So Mahaprabhu is... He knows where to go and what is going to happen in each place and what will nourish the mission for years to come. So like that. Anyway, so much more can be said on Puri. Puri is a very mystical place, actually. Yeah. And amazing Mahaprasadam. I don't know who's... You can choose.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for such an enlivening class. Maharaj, you were speaking about how, you know, Mahaprabhu met with all these different personalities, Guru Nanak, and, you know, with the Buddhists, with all these different...
I just had a side note on the Guru Nanak. I'm not saying... there's an audio manuscript which says that right. Guru Nanak and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met in front of the car at Jagannath Puri and they were singing together. I don't know if that's verified or not, right. But there is an audio manuscript which says that, just for the
record. Okay, all right. Right.
It's dangerous now, otherwise I get a barrage of emails and other such...
So, Mahaprabhu met all these diverse, groups of different individuals from different religious practices and, managed to convince them at the time to, that's where the question's coming from. But we see that these religious practices, Buddhism, Islam, and all these practices where Mahaprabhu had interacted with are still prevalent and quite strong today. So my question is, was Mahaprabhu's objective to convert them to becoming Gaudiya Vaishnavas, or was it to intensify their sincerity in their practice and gradually elevate? Because we'd find individuals of different practices and we would give them a book and, you know, it would get them inspired to go deeper into their own individual practice. Is that still a success for us as the representatives of the mission? That was my question.
Can you just summarize it in one? So are you asking like if... it's my fault. I wasn't... something else was going through my mind.
Yes, no worries, Marge.
So in other words, you were saying like if he preached in the South, then why are they still prevalent? Philosophies?
Yeah, we see that, he preached these conversions, but they're still in today.
They're still there?
Yeah.
So is your question why they're still there?
No, not why they're still there, but was his objective to convert them to become Gaudiya Vaishnavas?
Oh, was his objective to convert them to become Gaudiya Vaishnavas?
Or to make them deepen there.
Thank you. Preaching means bring people as close to Krishna as you can. Preaching is not stereotyped. Preaching means this and this only. Bring people closer to Krishna. And the best preacher knows how far to take someone, how far they can take someone. Isn't it? The best book distributors know. If you can get 10, why ask for 5? They know. They got the sixth sense, isn't it? They know, this guy, he can do better. He can do better. He can do more. So the Vaishnavas, they know how far they can take someone. So with some, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not a mindless preacher. He was a mindful preacher. Yeah, mindfulness. Is it mindful? You have to see how far someone can come. So he did not force. So some Brahmanas, they know, I want to continue chanting Ram's names. So no, you have to chant, one name of Krishna is worth 3 names of Ram, one name of Krishna is worth 3 names. No, he tried, open, give opportunity, step back, hey, back off. It's okay, let them go. Everyone has their time. So Yeah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was no coercion, there was no imposition, there was no intimidation, there was no expectation. You see, when these words enter into the vocabulary of a preacher, they compromise their potency, expectation, intimidation, imposition. That doesn't mean a preacher doesn't have a desire. When I was at Soho doing a marathon once, there was one devotee, his name was Bhakta Boon. That's a good name, huh? Boon. It's like, Bhakta Boon. I don't know where he is now. He's a very dedicated devotee, always used to come and do the marathon. And he told me, when you meet someone, you should be crying. Take a book. But he said, cry in your heart. On the external, you're just like, cool, like, hey, how's it going? Inside, you're like, take a book. So that's a devotee, that desire to give, that desire to take someone as far as they can. But then on the external, they know how much to push, how much to bend without breaking. How much? Because someone forced against their own will is of the same opinion still. So why? We don't want to just force people into doing something. They should do from the heart. So how far? So yeah, Mahaprabhu traveled to different places. And yeah, some of these things still remain. In South India, Mahaprabhu's purpose was not just to establish a movement. That was not his purpose there. That he did later through the Goswamis in Vrindavan. There were many other reasons why he went to the south. So when devotees travel to different places, they have different... Like when I started traveling, I asked my spiritual master, where should I go? So he said, have five types of places. I was like, wow, this is quite scientific. He said, some places you should go because you can. They are very influential places. From there you can make a bigger... Oh, I'm a fool anyway, but a good preacher can make a bigger influence. So go to influential places. He said, second place you should go to is go to places where you have relationships with devotees. Because where there are close relationships, where there is love, where there is sajatiya, a sense of we're on the same mission, we can do more. Then he said, some places, third type of place you should go to, where there's a need. Don't just go to all the easy places where you get all the mahaprasad. He said to me, don't become a Maharaj, king of the Maha, king of the Mahaprasad. So you have to go. So you have to go to some... Anyway, I have to go to some... So he said, third place, go to some difficult places where there's a need. And then he showed me four places, actually. And he said, the fourth place is, he goes... go where you can have some fun. And what he meant by that is just go to some places where you can just do class, kirtan, just like, yeah, without any necessarily managerial involvement or anything. It's just nice. You just go to a place, you're not managerially involved, you don't listen to any problems, there's no complexity, you just sing, dance, smile, and be with the Vaishnavas, take prasad, and that's also very good for you, and you can also invest in yourself and give more. So like, I'm just telling you that because that's like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he goes to different places and every place has its purpose, you know. And then I come to the manor to get the association of all of you. So thank you very much, and I've gone way over time. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.